calling in and live on lands cared for and called home by the Anishinaabe, Dakota, and other Native people since time immemorial. So we're glad from wherever you're calling in from that you are joining us tonight and here for our CCL training program, a weekly webinar program of Citizens Climate Lobby, and this week in partnership with Citizens Climate International, that provides CCL and CCI supporters like you and I with access to in-depth training opportunities on topics related to climate change and effective climate advocacy. I'm your host, Brett Cease, and tonight's topic is going to provide us a 2021 update from around the world. So thank you all for joining us. You're in for a real treat. We're going to have the chance to join CCI's Director of Programs, that's Citizens Climate International, Kathy Orlando, for a training that's highlighting what's going on around the world within CCI's network, what other countries are doing in terms of carbon pricing, why they're supporting that preferred policy, and how we're engaging them as citizens and constituents of the world. So with that, let me introduce our esteemed speaker tonight. Kathy Orlando, my good friend, works as Citizens Climate International's Program Director, where within an exceptional team, she creates the framework to empower volunteers to build political will for evidence-based climate action in over 60 countries worldwide. Kathy has been managing adult volunteers online since 2004, and Kathy is also a published scientist, first author twice. She started Citizens Climate Lobby's first international chapter in September of 2010 in Sudbury, Canada, and by November of the next year, she was directing CCL Canada as a full-time volunteer. She led the first delegations of CCL volunteers to the World Bank, and in 2017, she joined the international division at Citizens Climate Lobby. I know that Kathy wouldn't want me to brag for her on her behalf, but just a fun couple of little facts. Kathy is a recipient of the Queen Elizabeth II Diamond Jubilee Medal, the Desjardins Citizens Engagement Award from Climate Reality Canada, and the Senate of Canada's 150th sesquicentennial anniversary Unsung Heroes Medal. So with that, we're in for a real treat and a highly decorated individual joining us tonight. Kathy, the floor is yours, and thank you all for being here.
Yeah, thanks for that introduction, Brett, and thank you everyone for being here. Start with our learning objectives. I'm just going to dive right in. The first thing I would like you to learn about is to gain a better understanding of Citizens Climate International. And with the last year in mind, we'll understand and highlight the benefits of carbon pricing. And I hope that our field reports from around the world by CCLers like you in many countries empowers you. So why Citizens Climate International? So in September 2017, I was hired as program to start helping volunteers in countries around the world. So when I started in September 2017, there was one active chapter in Latin America. Now we have active chapters in Colombia, Chile, and Mexico, with developing chapters in Belize, Peru, Venezuela, and Argentina. In Europe, when I started in September 2017, there was active chapters in the United Kingdom, Germany, Sweden, and Portugal. And we added 11 more countries and a total of 21 active chapters in Europe since I've started in my role here. Africa has exploded. When I started in September 2017, there was one active chapter in Abuja, Nigeria, with four in development on the continent. Now there are 28 active chapters in 9 countries, including 8 active chapters in Nigeria, making it the third most active country in the world outside of Canada, the USA, and Australia, and 4 countries with developing chapters. And we have a whole Francophone division. And I know for Americans, you just had people from the USA, you might not know what the word Francophone means. It's a whole French speaking division. So for Africa, so countries like Togo and Guinea and Cote d'Ivoire, we have a whole division where they're getting services actually in French. And we're actually, a couple of weeks ago lobbied in French, kind of. I didn't do a great job, but they did people in the Ivory Coast, government officials in the Ivory Coast. It was a lot of fun. In Asia, we just had one chapter in Kathmandu in 2017. We no longer have that active chapter, but we have 2 active chapters each in Pakistan and Bangladesh, and 7 chapters in India, as well as an active chapter in Tokyo, and a developing chapter in what we call the Myanmar diaspora, and I will get to that later, and a developing chapter in Nepal. And lastly, there was just Australia in 2017, and there's quite a number of chapters there. Even they've been running on their own, but now there's a lot more chapters in Australia, and they've incorporated, and they've done a ton of things between then and 2017. An active group in New Zealand, and also a thoughtfully developing group in Singapore. So we have grown amazingly. So yeah, that's why there's a Citizens Climate International. We have a board. Dr. Megan Keita is the president. Isati Cintron is the secretary, and Andre Jimenez is the treasurer. We have 4 staff members, including myself, the program director, David Michael Tarungwa. He is a field development lead, but also still quite heavily involved in coordinating Africa. Celia is our senior program associate, and Joe Robinson is our executive director. And we have some regional managers. I couldn't do what I do without Marlo. He just has been helping me immensely since he joined in 2017, doing a lot of the stuff behind the scenes and helping with the fundraising that we have to help run our conferences. We have a regional coordinator, Isati Cintron, and Tammy used to help her, but yeah, they were both were involved with Latin America. David Michael Tarungwa is the African coordinator. James Collis is the European coordinator. We don't have a coordinator for Asia, but we have lots of Asian groups now. And just a special shout out to Rod here, who's been managing Australia for a long time. And maybe I should have put Lars up in Sweden as well. So yeah, we launched in 2021. We're an official entity. We have a website, a Facebook, a Twitter, an Instagram, a LinkedIn, and a YouTube channel. We run conferences, a forum, and other sorts of educational forums. We do a lot of the things that CCL does. We ran our first set of informational sessions in April, and we're doing them again in May, and then we're going to evaluate. And we blog about what various countries are doing. And this is something that Canada did lately. So it's the most recent blog up there. And I'm just going to give you about 1 minute of Dr. Megan Keita. He is speaking at our Earth Day Citizens Forum, and he opened up for us. And I would just want you to get a sense of the work that we're doing at CCI, or Citizens Climate
International. Thank everybody for being here for our first CCI Earth Day Citizens Forum. And I'm going to begin immediately by stealing from Frank by letting each of you know that every day is Earth Day, and we need to engage in our duties in respecting and exercising our stewardship for the Earth 24/7. It's important that we understand that this is a Citizens Forum. And in the Citizens Forum, I think one of the most important things that we need to recognize is the idea of our connections and the interrelationships between, well, all the things that go on in this globe. Those things are clearly environmental in the physical sense, but they also relate to the socio and political economic elements that are impacted by these things that we find most important in relationship to the Earth itself. The task before us can't be left simply to governments. As citizens, we're required, in fact, we're obligated to demand accountability and to direct policy. That's part of the question that lies at the center of a citizens forum. We need to recognize ourselves not only as citizens who do these things, but as global citizens, all of us as global citizens. And we're required to demand and then get accountability from the people who are, in fact, our servants, who we elect in most instances to do our bidding. We can't achieve this goal. We cannot save the planet and ourselves if we do not, in fact, demand that kind of accountability as global citizens. We cannot solve the associated crises, the crises related to global climate change, the interrelated crises of poverty, racism, sexism, classism, and all the rest, unless we act as citizens, global citizens, responsible global citizens. This means that we must see the interrelation between the major social crises that the world faces and the crises of global climate change. And in that, we must always seek to find the commonalities in these oppressions in our continued stewardship of the earth. Again, I want to welcome you. I want to thank you. And I want to charge you in the sense of an obligation, but also in the sense of energy to, in fact, do as Frank says, regard every day as Earth Day.
Okay, that was a wonderful speech. So that's your introduction to CCI. And now I'm going to go on to highlight the benefits of carbon pricing and taken through the lens of the last year. Some of the developments that have happened, because I haven't been here since before the COVID pandemic began. So just like you do in the United States, most of our chapters around the world focus on carbon fee and dividend, and sometimes they call it climate income, especially in Africa and as well as Europe. So yeah, we are for a fee on carbon pollution that's gradually rising, giving the money back to the people, and including border carbon adjustments. I want to share something with you. When I first started doing this work 10 years ago, I wasn't convinced that this was the best policy. It took me a while to really be convinced, but I want you to know I am now very convinced that climate income is the single most powerful tool we have to get to net zero by 2050. Last July, the largest study on carbon pricing was published. It looked at 43 countries that had carbon pricing and countries that did not. And there was a strong correlation between reduction in greenhouse gas emissions with countries that had carbon pricing compared to those that did not. As well, it was dose dependent. The stronger the carbon price, the higher the GHG emissions cut. So real world studies that carbon pricing works. Citizens Climate Lobby has taken some data, the IPCC data, and rolled it out for the world, and pretty much has found that if carbon fee and dividend was implemented as we want, for it to go up at $10 per ton per year, we would see the world going into the safe zone for 2 degree, not quite getting 1.5, so we're going to need other policies. But the data from the IPCC extrapolated certainly indicates that carbon pricing is quite an amazing tool to do this, especially if you want to get that carbon price up high, you're going to have to give the money back to the people. Those of you who know about on-roads, you might know that you can go and play, but for those and figure out what's the best policies. But for those of you that please go play at the on-roads policy simulator, this is their landing page telling us right now the world is on track to raise temperatures by 3.6 degrees Celsius or 6.5 degrees Fahrenheit. You can go in and play with all these toggles and maximize everything you wish, and nothing comes close to carbon pricing. You maximize carbon price basically into the range that we suggest. You take 1.1 Celsius, or sorry, I didn't do the Fahrenheit conversion, off the planet, but you also see a massive reduction in coal use and oil use and gas use, and an uptake of renewables. So very powerful. Nothing comes close to carbon pricing on the on-roads policy simulator. And you just, need to electrify a few things, get some energy efficiency, play around with these things a bit, and we can get to 1.5C, but you should go convince yourself. And then Citizens Climate Lobby, one of our colleagues, Jerry Hinkle, has dug down into the data and has done a whole analysis that you can walk through with him by watching all the seminars that he gave. We've even got the data within our own house. And what gets me super excited about all these models is that most of them are so-called conservative. They can't take into consideration this concept called policy-induced innovation. So when a policy is introduced, sometimes things will happen that will just that they can't account for, that companies and entrepreneurs and venture capitalists will start investing money because they know that this is where the puck is going. And you just can't model for that. Here's some of the biggest proof I think this will work. I don't know if you know this, but the Koch brothers were actually last year, not the Koch brothers, Koch Industries, because one of them is gone now. The Koch Industries were lobbying against the Energy and Innovation Act in the last Congress. And it was and there were 10 carbon pricing bills in the congressional pipeline last year. And they were only lobbying against the Energy and Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act, which is the carbon fee and dividend bill that you're all working on. So yeah, I think that's proof that it'll work too. And then I can turn to my own country where we actually do have a carbon fee and dividend policy as our national policy. And I know this is a pretty intense graph, chart I mean, but the data here has been generated by Canadians for Clean Prosperity. And it's also very similar, not exact, to the modeling that's been done by our own parliamentary budget office. And basically, if in Canada we have a full carbon pricing policy with border carbon adjustments going out to $15 a ton up between 2022 and 2030, so it's $170 a ton by 2030, we get 206% past our Paris Agreement target, which gets us about, well, not quite to the 2-degree limit, but we're getting close. So we really, it takes a big, huge chunk out of the greenhouse gas emissions. It almost doubles the amount of GHGs that would be reduced if we just didn't have carbon pricing straight across the economy. So we need those border carbon adjustments. So we're looking to you in the USA, as well as our colleagues around the world, so we can really help Canada get our carbon pricing policy going strong. And a lovely thing is economic data shows that the lower income quintiles do get more money back with our carbon pricing policy in Canada. And only the higher income quintiles pay more. And it's really like, even at the max in 2022, it's $200 a year, which is the equivalent of a fancy cup of coffee a week. And I think they can afford that. And here's why. This is the average income footprint of the various quintiles and deciles across the world. And you can see the top 10% of earners in every country in the G20 for which they have data consumes way more carbon than average. And those in the 50th and 40th percentile consume way less. And that's why most people come out ahead. And then there's been massive progress in Canada, like I've been alluding to. We're going to have a carbon price of $170 a Canadian a ton by 2030, provided things don't go sideways at elections. And we're working on that. But happily, all political parties and major political parties in Canada do support carbon pricing. They just have different models. But I don't have time to get into that. Our government is also exploring border carbon adjustments. I actually sat in a seminar at the WTO with 750 people, where the permanent mission of the Canadian of Canada at the WTO hosted this event, where they discussed border carbon adjustments in the various sectors of the economy. On the next day, gave a presentation along with Dr. Ross Astoria and two other border carbon adjustments experts to members of the European Union, about 15 of them. And later, the European Union voted overwhelmingly, not unanimously, to support border carbon adjustments in 2023. So that's the members of the European Parliament did that. And then the best thing happened on March 25th is 6 out of 9 judges of the Supreme Court of Canada ruled on the constitutionality of the Greenhouse Gas Pollution Pricing Act, and ruled that it is constitutional and government has the right to do that. So that's very exciting. So we are working behind the scenes to make border carbon adjustments happen. It's a wonderful video where we're doing this project with an organization called Zero C.
Thank you so much, Kathy, and hi, everybody. My name's Izzy. I'm a senior campaign manager at the Zero Carbon Campaign, and I'm here to talk to you about a new intervention that we're launching today in collaboration with Citizens Climate International to try and persuade the UK government to demonstrate ambitious leadership on carbon pricing at the G7. But before I dive into what we're trying to achieve and why we need your help, let me first say a little bit more about the Zero Carbon Campaign. We're a UK-based advocacy organisation that's calling on our government to implement stronger, fairer and more consistent carbon pricing as a core part of their policy roadmap to net zero. I'm pleased to note that we and other carbon pricing advocates have been successful in driving some true domestic ambition in this space. But as always, there's more work to do, and who better to collaborate with than CCL members? Although we're UK-based, we recognise that emissions do not end at the UK's borders, and neither should carbon pricing. If we're going to have any chance of delivering on the goals of the Paris Agreement, then we urgently need to address the fact that 80% of global emissions remain unpriced. However, given issues with negotiations in the past, Article 6 is not likely to be front and centre of this year's COP. It's clear that we need to start exploring alternative solutions, and that's why we're talking to you today. We believe, as we know that CCL members do, that border carbon adjustment mechanisms can play a vital role in driving progress towards a global agreement on carbon pricing. A multilateral commitment to implementing BCAs would have multiple benefits, as I know listeners will be aware, including preventing offshoring, protecting jobs, and raising funds for the low carbon transition. So what will it take to achieve alignment on the benefits of border carbon adjustments? We believe that the G7 is the perfect forum for countries to come together to discuss how BCAs can be implemented in a way that is both effective in driving down emissions and fair for nations who are not able to decarbonise at the rate of developed economies. The UK, as president of the G7, has an opportunity to drive real progress on this issue and set the scene for a successful COP. What's more, we know that the UK government is supportive of border carbon adjustments as an effective climate mitigation policy. But in order for all this potential to be realised, the government needs to know that all international eyes are on them to step up and lead ahead of the summit. And that's where you come in. We need to coalesce high-level international support behind this call for the government to champion border carbon adjustments at the G7. And we need everybody listening to help us persuade national climate ambassadors, ministers, and other influential diplomatic figures to sign our open letter to the UK Prime Minister, Boris Johnson. So how can you help build this coalition of persuasive letter signatories? Just by actioning a few simple steps. Step one, identify your targets. We've been working with CCO International to compile a list of targets to approach to sign our letter. These have been categorised by country to make it quick and easy for volunteers around the world to identify targets from their countries of citizenship, but there's no rules about who or how many targets you can contact. If you've got the time and the appetite to contact representatives from countries other than your own, then do feel free. After all, the more volunteers that contact signatories, the more likely it is that they'll agree to sign the letter. And step two is super easy. You just need to click the link in this presentation to open up the email template that includes the link for the target to read and sign our letter. It's currently only available in English, but we are on hand to help with translation if required. Our target is to have a list of signatories by the beginning of June so we can deliver this letter to the Prime Minister on World Environment Day on the 5th. So we really need to get signatories over the course of the next month, and so start sending out those emails in the next 2 to 3 weeks. Step three, in order to track progress, we need to know who has written to which targets. So as a third step, we're asking you to take a couple of minutes to email us with an update to let us know that you've reached out, heard back, or secured your signatures. And the email address is there in the presentation. And finally, just a reminder that our wonderful colleagues, David Michael Turungwa and Kathy Orlando, will be on hand to help coordinate this outreach from the CCO international perspective. So if you're a country leader, then please do contact them before making your approaches. If you're a CCL volunteer or a volunteer from another organisation, on the other hand, then all you've got to do is pick a target and get stuck in. But if you need help, then please do contact us at the Zero Carbon Campaign. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. We really hope we've convinced you of the opportunity we have in front of us to make real progress on global carbon pricing at the G7. But we can't do it without you, so please get emailing. And just a final note to say that we'll be following up with a link to all these instructions so that you can start getting involved. Thanks again.
And we're targeting various world leaders to ask the G7 to the president of the G7, which is the United Kingdom, to enact border carbon in their role as G7 president, or just push for it at the G7, but also in their role at COP26. So to show some leadership on border carbon adjustments. I'm going to apologize right off the bat. I can't tell you every story of every single chapter across the world, but I'm going to tell you as many as I can. So hold on to your seats. In case you missed it, something really huge happened last week in Germany. For the first time, a court determined that a nation's climate change reduction plan presents a clear and present danger to the freedoms of young people. Basically, it's a human rights issue. And the court describes the current measures by the German government as violations of the freedoms of the complainants, some who are very, and this is very surprising because Germany has some of the most aggressive climate plans aligned with the science. And one of the reasons why I bring that up, because here in Canada, we have a youth court case that is going through here in the largest province, where they are suing the Ontario government for rolling back their climate targets. And they're calling them out on what we call our Charter of Rights and Freedoms, or basically our human rights as children. And it's actually the government of Ontario tried to stop it twice. Twice the courts have allowed it to go through. So now this case will be heard. Now, why is this CCL? Because this young lady here, who you can't see, Alex Neufeld, is the leader of Citizens Climate Lobby in the National Capital Region. And this child here is my daughter, and she's one of the chief complainants as well. And there's a wonderful team of seven youth supported by Canada's Ecofiscal Commission that is suing the Ontario government for not meeting their greenhouse gas emissions targets or for huge implications globally. This will really start to push governments and also make investment people who invest in fossil fuels wary, because they might, you know, legally be accountable or lose their work. Okay, so world. I'm going to miss a lot of people, so I'm going to apologize in advance. So we have this wonderful chapter in New Zealand, and they recently had a paper commissioned by Infometrics, and it's the economic assessment of carbon dividend in New Zealand. And they basically showed similar sort of data to what you get with REMI. I don't have time to go into the details, but it was given it to their government. So this is your colleagues in New Zealand. We, for the past year, have had a chapter in Japan that's been developing. They've gone through all the training. I can't give you the exact metrics. They meet with politicians. They have a Facebook. They have a website. They come in on every single Citizens Climate International call we have for leaders. They share their reports from the fields. They're trying to help their conservative government in Japan embrace carbon pricing and hopefully more of a carbon fee and dividend policy. We have a chapter in Bangladesh, two actually, one in Dhaka and one in Barishal. And they are working collaboratively together. So they're to develop a citizens' climate in Bangladesh. They have a Facebook. They have been trained, they have memberships, and they're growing, and their plans right now are to grow. We have seven chapters in India. Again, they're doing a ton of work, just figuring out where exactly they need to do things, because they're, you know, it's a country of 1.2 billion people, so they're still working on their plans, and we will be seeing more from them soon. Very interesting work going on in Pakistan. Our leader there, Raza, is has been hired by the Islamic Relief Fund as their climate coordinator for all of Pakistan. So he's leaning on us a little bit to help with, you know, communicating, And vice versa, working together on how to communicate better with the Pakistan government. Really fascinating story about Raza. He's a lawyer by training, and in many parts of Global South, it's really fascinating. They actually openly lobby their politicians on Twitter. So he was doing this open lobbying of the Minister of Climate Change for Pakistan. And that's how he got picked up by the Islamic Relief Fund people. So really doing some fantastic work there. Our colleagues in the UK are getting ready for COP26. They've joined us on our COP26 calls. And they're also doing a lot more building of political will at the local level to help build political will just for climate action in general. So that feeds up to have stronger climate policies for the United Kingdom. Our group in Sweden, I know I'm going like a mile a minute here, but our group in Sweden just had a national interview yesterday, and I was part of it, like just yesterday. I don't know if you know what's going on in Colombia right now, but they are suffering from a tax revolt. It has nothing to do with carbon taxes, but there's been violence. So our thoughts go to our colleagues in Colombia and in Chile. They're in the middle of elections, so it's more like public education, but once the elections are over, they will go back to lobbying their politicians. I know that was a lot of information. Some really cool stories. Okay, here's one from Colombia. This little boy here, he's 11 years old. He's a Fridays for Future striker. He's part of Citizens Climate Lobby in Colombia as well. He is now the Colombia's ambassador to the European Union. Isn't that cool? 11-year-old CCL boy from Colombia, Francesco Vera. He is the ambassador, the Colombian goodwill ambassador to the European Union. This is the sort of work your colleagues are doing, building connection links. It's a beautiful story. He's an incredible young man. I alluded to before that we're working with a group called the Myanmar Diaspora. It's the longest running civil war on the planet. It's like 50 years old or something. Millions of people have been displaced out of Myanmar, which is the country on the other side of Bangladesh. And so there's this diaspora, a collection of people who no longer live in Burma, but who are watching what is happening in Burma or Myanmar. And I don't know if you know, but there was a coup on February 2nd and the military took over. So this young lady, Yanjian, who's a member of CCL, got the idea that the organization that she's been working with, which is, could do some work with building democracy back up in Myanmar. Now, I don't know if you noticed, if you go to our website at Citizens Climate Lobby, Citizens Climate International, we don't have the same solution to climate change. We don't say democracy. We say people. Because in like countries like Colombia and Myanmar, things are challenged. So here's a video of Jianjian explaining GM for
acknowledgement for the land that I'm sitting on, which is Powhatan land. And yes, I'm Jianjian. I'm a Kitchen American, born and raised here in Virginia, Northern Virginia of America. And the Global Movement for Myanmar Democracy, GM4MD, is a youth-led grassroots organization supporting Myanmar's fight for a federal democracy through international coordinated action, I should say. It was founded in response to the military coup on February 1st, and GM4MD consists of 45 students and young professionals and an advisory board, including Simon Billinis from International Campaign for Rohingya, Mark Farminer from Burma Campaign UK, Wei Wei Nu, a well-renowned international human rights activist who is Rohingya, and Kin Omar, who is also another well-renowned Burmese activist. Our mission is to leverage social media and mass organizing to raise awareness among the diaspora and the broader international community. And we achieve our goals through advocacy, global campaigns, and health and wellness initiatives, which have thus far garnered the support of 10,000 individuals, or more than 10,000, and 200,000 plus views on Facebook, and 10,000 plus dollars for emergency medical needs. So that's something that we love to pride ourselves in with like the little few months that we've been functioning. And I just like to share my screen really quickly, just to give you a little introduction. This is our webpage. Anyone can go and visit to learn more about all the things that we're up to. We function through advocacy, social media, protest organizing, press and publicity, storytelling, fundraising, wellness committee, and a data team. So it's very comprehensive. And yeah, that will be it for my spiel.
A lot's going on. Our colleagues in Australia, they have, they're growing, they have incorporated, they have numerous conferences regionally and nationally every year, and they have a campaign going on for public education as well on the Australian Climate Dividend. Our Citizens Climate International in Africa, here's a report from David Michael Tarangwa.
And at the moment, we have one major project which is ongoing. So the pictures you see on your screen are those of our volunteers who are visiting their respective government offices. And the target is asking them to include carbon pricing, precisely carbon fee and dividend, into the updated NDCs. As you know, many African countries and indeed other countries across the world are right now revising their NDCs to be submitted to the UNFCCC.
He's describing that many countries, I think 8 or 9, their volunteers in Africa went to their governments to ask their governments to join, to include carbon pricing in their NDCs. And there was a lot of field reports, but this one struck me. Nancy Tembo, who is the Minister for Forestry and Natural Resources in Malawi, was lobbied by our CCL Malawi group. And one of them was a young person who had done a university project on carbon pricing. They talked to her about the benefits of carbon fee and dividend, and she did a whole Facebook post about it, talking about it. It was so beautiful. When we work with our chapters in the Global South, we often don't just jump into carbon pricing. It's a really good idea to make a strong connection to the nature around them. And we have this woman in Belize who is juggling both carbon pricing and nature-based solutions. And this is Ruth's story about the work she's doing in Belize.
Thank you so much for this time. I really appreciate getting this platform. I have my PowerPoint set up here. We're doing a lot of work when it comes to environmental restoration in Belize. And one of our key attributes that we're highlighting is endemic species protection. Our Atlantic goliath grouper is one of those flagship species. And we have been advocating and working with the fishermen on protecting these huge groupers, you know, from extinction. And we also work with the seaweed farmers. So we look at how the seaweed farms are serving as a nursery area for lobster, conch juveniles. And so we also partner with the Placentia Producers Cooperative Limited. And we also partner with the women's group, and in myself, a part of the youth group, and in Southern Belize, and also I'm the national coordinator for the Commonwealth Youth Climate Change Network that we've activated our youths. And so our entire value chain, I would say, it's not only from grassroots, but now we're going into attaining some sort of seat in policy making when it comes to our sustainable development plans and reaching that 2030 goal. So for now, I would just like to say thank you so much for creating this platform.
Okay. And then most recently, Canada, we had a pan-Canadian brunch with our provincial parliamentarians, which is the equivalent of your state legislature people. It's a full-time job. And in total, we had 108 of our volunteers managed to get 18 provincial parliamentarians into this Zoom call with these experts and youth. And then we went into breakout sessions and lobbied our face-to-face in Zoom sessions, members from of the provincial legislature for Ontario, Manitoba, Alberta, and British Columbia. It was really cool. We also work behind the scenes at the G7 and the G20 and COP26, and I don't have time to go into all that work, but it's a very influential year. And I'll end. So this is James at Citizens Climate Europe. James, he manages the group that lobbies at the European Union level, and he spent a lot of time with myself and Jess behind the scenes working at the G7. In trying to enhance the knowledge of the civil society networks that that lobby directly our leaders in the G7 to include more ideas about carbon pricing and border carbon adjustments. It was a lot of work this year, so kudos to James. But here is his update about the state of play in the European Union.
Hi, my name's James Collis, and I'm the regional coordinator for Citizens Climate Lobby here in Europe. I took talk to you about a couple of things. Firstly, what's happening in Europe, what we know is happening and what we think will happen next. And secondly, what our priorities are for the coming months. So the first major news is the EU passed into legislation the climate law. This commits the EU to 55% emissions reductions by 2030 and the net zero goal by 2050. This establishes the legal framework in which all legislation now has to combine to achieve. There are a number of instruments under review, and the answer will come from how these particular tools are combined. The EU Commission is scheduled to present its approach in June-July timeframe. And our assessment is what we're likely to see is that the ETS for energy and large industry will continue. There will be a second ETS for buildings and transport, and a notional ETS will be introduced to support the border carbon adjustment to put a price on imported emissions. Significantly, for the first time, we believe there's an opportunity to explore legislation for some form of payment back to citizens. In a recent meeting, the EU President, Ursula von der Leyen, discussed with the second largest party group, bearing in mind in Europe we have seven party groups in the Parliament. I specifically discussed the need to ensure some form of just transition, and that there plan to look at the Swiss model for working out the best way to do that. And this was during a meeting in which the Social and Democratic Party, this second largest group, actively promoted the citizen dividend as an important concept. So from our point of view, where we're focusing our resources, firstly, is closer cooperation between the European Parliamentary Group and the national teams. And the reason for this is the next stage of legislative negotiation involves the European Parliament, where we've been focused up till now, and includes the Commission and the national governments of the 20 plus countries across Europe. This means we need to coordinate much better with the national teams in those countries if we're going to be effective in lobbying for consistent European legislation. The second focus area for us is on a piece of legislation called the Energy Taxation Directive. This gives us the opportunity to create a direct link between greenhouse gas emissions and a carbon price. And whilst it isn't going to replace the ETS and a number of the other tools in the short term, we believe it has the long-term capacity to add value and become a more significant tool in the different legislation to achieve the reductions that we need. In particular, it could be used as a rising floor price within the energy trading system. Also, it can be used to influence funding going back to citizens. Currently in the ETS, funding goes to a modernization fund and an innovation fund, both of which are well-intentioned, both of which have flaws and could be significantly improved. So the ability to do those things would change the current regressive nature of the way carbon is priced in the EU. And they lead on to the final point I wanted to touch on, which is this opportunity to work with the political relationships that we've established and combine that with the expertise in the International Climate Income Alliance. This has specific intelligence and knowledge on how the Swiss recycling of revenue systems work, and we think we can make those relationships work to good effect. So there's one final thing that we have on our to-do list, and that is to address funding. Currently, CCL in Europe is a completely volunteer-based organization, and in order to scale and execute on the priorities we've got, we want to move to a firm financial footing so that as our operations become more sophisticated, we're able to coordinate well in this next phase of our work in Europe. So thank you very much for listening. I hope it's been useful. As ever, we acknowledge the work done elsewhere in CCL because we stand on the shoulders of our colleagues in what we do in Europe. And really appreciate how your work informs what we do. Thank you.
Close by saying thank you, thank you, thank you on behalf of all of us attending live and the many, many more that are going to tune in on their own time frame across our podcast channels, our YouTube or Vimeo and CCL community. This is one of my favorite weeks of the year when I get an update and just get to have that shot in the arm to know what's going on throughout the rest of the world. So we are just eternally grateful. If there's anything that we can do to return the favor and support you, please let us know. And again, thank you for your leadership.
Chimiigwech. Bless you all. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Citizens Climate Lobby's training program. You can tune into more episodes anywhere podcasts are available. Inspired by what you heard today? Join Citizens Climate Lobby to advocate for bipartisan climate solutions. Go to community.citizensclimate.org to find more trainings, resources, your local chapter, national action teams, discussion forums, and more. Be sure to like our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Citizens Climate. We also invite all of our listeners to subscribe to our YouTube channel for more inspiration. And together, we are creating the political will for a livable world.